Ms. Ralston.
May it please the Court. My name is Krista Ralston, and I'm here representing Daniel Abeda in this appeal of his sentence after revocation imposed by Judge Crabb. The main issue in this case is whether, under the totality of circumstances in this case, the statutory maximum 24-month sentence after a revocation of supervised release imposed on Mr. Abeda violated the applicable standard of reasonableness, whether that's plainly unreasonable, as this Court has held, or the unreasonable standard defined in by the U.S. Supreme Court in Gall versus U.S.
What's the difference in practical terms between those two?
Your Honor, I think, as this Court has stated, there probably isn't any discernible difference in practical terms. That unreasonable, plainly unreasonable, it's almost impossible to distinguish that.
Now, Bernard Hand once famously said that he understood two standards of review, deferential review and non-deferential review, and his mind couldn't take in any more. And I think there are a lot of us up here who have the same general view. So if nothing turns on this, maybe you should move on to something else.
I wasn't planning on actually arguing. I had just pointed that out in my brief with the suggestion that this Court might want to reconsider that. The relevant
you can always ask us to clear away unneeded verbiage.
Yes. One word, plainly.
All right. So why do you think that it's wrong for a district court for a revocation of supervised release to consider the need to complete drug treatment? It seems to me there are plenty of cases that say that's a perfectly reasonable. He certainly seems to have needed that, and I don't see why the court couldn't think that.
Your Honor, the issue on that specific thing of drug treatment need is that the statutes themselves discourage. The policy statement of the legislature is that imprisonment should not be used as a means for rehabilitation or treatment. That's in 18 U.S.C. 3582.
Right, but that's just in the abstract. And here, this is a supervised release revocation where Mr. Abeda just isn't complying. He's maybe trying. I mean, he's a person who's struggling, clearly, with addiction, but he's not making it with as much freedom, and he has violated his supervised release. I don't think there's any question about that. And so the judge is thinking, well, you know, I'm skeptical that this is really going to help, but maybe this is your last chance. Maybe if you can just be forced to stay dry during this period of time, it'll help. It's a factor. I don't see why that's out of bounds for the district judge.
Well, Your Honor, I think that it's not out of bounds for the district judge to take into consideration the need for treatment.
Why doesn't that end your case? I mean, she does take that into account, and we agree that he's violated the conditions of his supervised release.
Because the point is that imprisonment, and especially a term of imprisonment that's grossly above what the advisory guidelines suggest.
Well, that's just because the numbers are low. I mean, you can come up with a very large percentage increase if you go from 5 to 10. Even
right,
if it's 100%
right.
Increase, but
it's more than 100% increase at the top of the line.
But the overall numbers are fairly low.
But that's part of the thing here is that the judge didn't really give a reason why she jumped from 5 to 11 months, which is what the guidelines would indicate, all the way to the statutory maximum of 24 months, solely for the purpose of giving treatment, which she concedes herself in the transcript, might not work. There's no guarantee that it would work. It hasn't worked. He had been in prison for 4 years already, gotten the in-prison treatment part there, then was out on supervised release.
It's not clear that you aren't digging a hole for yourself. What you're saying now, as I hear you, is no amount of imprisonment is ever going to deter this man. I think that's pretty much what the district court concluded, and the district court said that this sentence was to protect the public, in other words, to incapacitate. If deterrence won't work, if your client is intractable, then you're left with incapacitation. And that sounds like exactly what the district court said.
But Your Honor, the fact that he had, and his violations were alcohol-related. He had an alcohol problem.
Which is not a benign activity.
But that is something that the state court deals with, and the policy statement for the sentencing after revocation is that the purpose or the reason for sentencing, for the sentence imposed, should be because of the violation of trust against the court, not for specifically the activity itself. That is going to be and is being handled by the state courts. The violation of trust in
I think that takes it too far. Sure, there's a violation of trust aspect, but federal courts look every day at the content of the violation. What did you do that's causing you to be here before me again? Well, you couldn't comply with some of the important terms of your supervised release. I mean, the judges look at that.
But, you know, again, Your Honor, the point here is not that and we're not challenging that he should have been revoked, that he did violate. It's the length of the sentence that was given that was so out of line with the behavior that he had, which was drinking, and yes, there were drunk drivings. We don't have the facts here of how bad that was. In fact, the one driving was he was stopped for speeding, not for bad driving. So it's not that there were accidents. It's not that there was any kind of certainly no violation of any federal laws. There was no violent behavior or anything else that came into play in some of the other cases where courts have upheld a 24-month sentence when the guidelines were much less. This is also not a situation where Mr. Abeda got a break, so to speak, in the first place by getting a shorter sentence than the guidelines indicated in the first place. He was sentenced at the top of the guidelines, I believe, in his initial sentence. So it's not that he got a much shorter sentence and then violated the court's trust. Also, the court recognizes here that he tried, that he tried to comply, and he did comply to a certain extent. He completed completed 2 years of his 3-year extended supervised release here. And the court even states in her giving of reasons that it's not that you haven't worked on this problem. It's a horrible and practical problem. I don't know that putting you in prison for a long period of time is going to do any good. So she recognized from the beginning that this might not even serve the purpose for which she was giving the long sentence. Her other purpose is that she stated in compliance with 3553 of protecting society and having him take responsibility for his actions. I think those were words that she said because the statute says you have to take these other things in consideration. I don't think there's anything in the record that justifies a sentence so much longer than what the guidelines would have recommended here for the purpose of protecting society or for him to take accept responsibility, because he was accepting responsibility, and he did try. And there were other options for the judge. This was not one of those cases where there was a mandatory imposition of imprisonment. The judge did have other options in sentencing to deal with the treatment option, including putting him into giving a much shorter sentence in a community setting where he could go to work and also take advantage of treatment options. So I think that in this case, the judge overstepped the bounds of what's reasonable in terms of, especially when the statute discourages having prison be the sole or primary reason for, or having rehabilitation and treatment be the sole primary reason for a prison term. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Broderick.
Good morning. I'm John Beaudry. I'm the U.S. Attorney up in Madison, and I've been with this case since the beginning, back in 2004. Just a couple of points. As we said in our brief, first of all, I think the district court was completely correct in linking her sentence to the need for rehabilitation. I think we are in a different setting with revocation than with initial confinement under 3582 and 3553. So then that leads us to the question whether the sentence was properly explained, and under any deferential standard of review, however one defines this, whether it was reasonable or plainly or not unreasonable or not plainly unreasonable. First, getting to the point Ms. Ralston made, Judge Crabb did throw up her hands and say, I don't know if this is going to work, never having sat in that chair. But I can't imagine that one is ever completely certain that what one is saying to the defendant will work and what one is imposing will work, whether it's 30 years in prison or 24 months to get control of drinking. So I don't think that really matters. I think what it shows is that she clearly had gone over her options. She clearly realized there were no options left. There had been three times an inpatient, five violations before we ever filed the revocation, another revocation, another drunk driving, OWI, after revocation. Mr. Abate admitted he couldn't.
Has that one been adjudicated yet?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. I happen to be
pending at the time you filed your brief, at least so you said.
Right, and I think it was. I happened to be from Sawyer County. It's entirely possible that when we revoked them, they just kind of figured not to take any more court time from the one judge in Sawyer County. But I don't know the answer to that. Oftentimes, if we get the case and start to do the revocation, they will just stand down and not worry about it. What Judge Crabb did is, again, very briefly, but she threw up her hands and she said, I know the history here. I know we're out of options. I know probation is tried. And then she directly linked the sentence to what was really the problem here, an uncontrollable alcoholism. She felt sorry for Mr. Beta, knew he was trying, but there's nothing else the court could do. So I think she was legally correct in relying on that and addressing that for prison for rehabilitation. She hoped it would be long enough. In terms of choosing the length, it's clear she hoped it would be long enough to get into the Bureau of Prisons program, which I think requires 20 months, something like that. And she linked it to the violations. So I think the sentence was explained, and it was reasonable, however one looks at it deferentially. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to stay. Otherwise, I won't take any more of your time. Thank you.
Anything further, counsel?
Yes, Judge Wood, I can answer your question about that case. It is still pending. There's a status conference scheduled, I think, next week or the week after that. I don't know whether they will bring him back from Lexington, where he is now, or what, you know, what exactly will happen, but the case is still pending.
Still pending. Thank
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm. The only other point that I want to make here is, again, in terms of this appeal, and it has to do with the length of the sentence that was given, not that he was given an imprisonment sentence, but the length of that sentence. He's now at Lexington. The 500-hour program, I believe it's called, certainly doesn't take 20 months or whatever. I have no idea whether he's been given the opportunity to participate in the program or not. It is one that he had participated in already before. And he's basically just sitting there now in prison on this 24-month sentence, basically for having the disease of alcoholism. And I think that the judge had an obligation here to give more reasons as to why she chose that specific sentence. And it is my understanding that the judgment itself didn't even recommend that he be placed in any kind of special program or anything like that. Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement, and we appreciate